Hello, you are listening to the Beyond the Jargon podcast on CFUV 101.9 FM. Before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge with respect the Lekwungen-speaking peoples on whose traditional territory the university and CFUV stands, and the Songhees, Esquimalt, and Wasanish peoples whose historical relationships with the land continue to this day. I'm a guest on this land, and I'm extremely grateful for the experiences and the life it has given me while I've been here. This is the 10th season of the podcast, and I'm super excited to be your host. My name is Sam Kaiser. I use he/him pronouns, and I'm a master's student studying music technology in the final semester of my studies. My research is mainly focused on the implications of the growing popularity of immersive audio formats on popular music. Because this is the first episode of the season, give any new listeners a little rundown on what we do here on Beyond the Jargon. Welcome back to any previous listeners of the podcast as well. I'm super excited to be taking on this project this time around. Beyond the Jargon exists to give a platform to graduate students at UVic so they can discuss their research in an accessible and non-formal way. I will be interviewing graduate students from various faculties at different points in their academic careers, asking them about their research topics, their experiences as grad students, and what their future plans may be. I'm excited to jump right into it with the first guest of this season, Luke Seibold. Luke is a first-year master's student in mechanical engineering and is part of the new interdisciplinary cohort at UVic, Coastal Climate Solutions Leaders, or CCSL. Luke is also a friend of mine from middle school, and it was a pleasure catching up with him about his work.
Hi there. I'm Luke Seibold, mechanical engineering master's candidate at the University of Victoria, and I'm super excited to be here.
Sweet. Thanks for being here. Since we're in a radio station, would you mind talking about maybe music that you enjoy right now? Just a sort of a fun start to this interview.
Yeah, for sure. Right now, I'm really into jazz rap.
Okay.
So some MF Doom and abstract orchestra. That's kind of what I'm into right now. It changes from time to time, but that's kind of what I'm listening to right now.
Sweet. Sweet. I don't think I've really ever listened to jazz rap. I listened to a little bit of MF Doom, but beyond that, I might have to do a little bit more exploring into that as well.
Yeah, I'm doing that myself, and it's been pretty cool.
Sweet. Awesome. So what brought you to UVic or Victoria, and where are you coming from before this?
I'm coming from the University of California, Berkeley, where I did my undergrad in mechanical engineering. I have lived on the island before. During COVID, I moved to Tofino and was working in a little surf shop there called Live to Surf. And that was a really cool experience for the year. Then went back to school in California, finished up my undergrad there. And I just love the island so much. And my girlfriend goes to school at UVic. And they had a great program for mechanical engineering in the ocean sciences as well. So my interest in wave energy conversion, I got in touch with a professor who was actually the supervisor for one of my TAs at Berkeley. And so it all just kind of fell into place that I ended up here, and I'm really loving it.
Sweet. That's awesome. You sort of mentioned it briefly, the wave energy conversion stuff. You're also part of a new cohort at UVic. Do you want to just sort of mention that briefly and just kind of talk about what brought that to your attention?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm part of the first cohort of the Coastal Climate Solutions Leaders program here at UVic, or CCSL for short. I was introduced to it by my supervisor, Brad Buckham, as something to apply for. Basically, it's this program that brings together people from all different disciplines at UVic to discuss solutions to the climate issues that we're facing today. Because it is such an interdisciplinary issue, we need experts in fields of engineering, business, law, policy, all these things to be able to come together and make a coordinated effort to slow down and hopefully stop climate change.
So you kind of mentioned that a little bit, where the other students in your cohort are coming from. You mentioned business, policy, law. Mm-hmm. How large is your cohort?
I don't know the specific number. I'd say about 20.
Okay.
About
cool.
20.
And they're spread, maybe one or two from each faculty, or would you say there's more of one or the other?
I'd say there's quite a few in engineering. There's mm-hmm. probably about three or so mechanical engineers,
cool.
One or two civil engineers. Not sure if there, I don't think there's any electrical engineers, But so, yeah, engineering makes up a good portion of it. Lots of people in environmental sciences as well. Mm-hmm. A handful from business, as I said. And yeah, so all over the board.
For sure. Yeah. Seems to make sense to me. Like, all of these disciplines could focus on, like, coastal populations, coastal geography. I think that's kind of just an observation there.
Yeah, yeah. So that is definitely the focus of the group. It is coastal climate solutions leaders. We are on the West Coast, so that's mm-hmm. we're really focused on finding solutions to coastal communities like sure. Victoria, where we live, because it is such a wide-ranging issue. It would be almost impossible, and a very place-based issue. Mm-hmm. It'd be almost impossible to not only focus on all the different impacts of climate change, but also all the different impacts on every single different place in the world.
For
so
sure.
we're narrowed in kind of what we know here in on the West Coast of Canada in a coastal community. And so that's why we are the Coastal Climate Solutions Leaders.
And just like thinking about how many populations live on the coast in BC, we mm-hmm. have like basically all this side of the island. We have just like the mainland as well. And there's many considerations I would expect about tsunamis and earthquakes and just like zones. Liquefaction zones, I think they're called, like mm-hmm. where a lot of communities live. Like, I think Richmond is a big one.
Yeah.
It's different sections of Victoria as well. I think in Esquimalt as well. It's just a huge topic for people living in this area. And I'm sure it's a huge worry for many people who've kind of settled coming from different provinces, different places, because we see a lot of that as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just dialing back a bit, I'm curious about the application procedure for your program. And did you find it difficult? And were there any interesting prerequisites or associated activities that you didn't expect? Or found interesting?
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed the application process mm-hmm. here at UVic. It was quite unique compared to some of the other schools that I applied to, whereas many of the others were kind of maybe essay-based. Mm-hmm. That was probably the majority of what the application process was writing essays and answering questions. Whereas here at UVic, although there wasn't so much of that, and it was mainly just submitting like transcripts and like a resume, where you were able to differentiate yourself as an actual human being and as a person, was by getting in contact with a potential supervisor mm-hmm. and finding a potential research topic that interested you both, and ensuring that you were compatible with them and you'd be able to work with them. It was an application on a much more personal level, where you actually felt like you were talking to someone and understanding people, or even just person that you'd be working with most closely here at UVic. And so I really appreciated that. And that also was definitely a contributing factor to why I came here. I believe it was after I had been accepted mm-hmm. to the Masters of Applied Sciences program with Brad Buckham in mechanical engineering, that he told me about applying to the CCSL program.
Okay, so that was, so like you mentioned, that was after you'd already been accepted, you think?
I believe so. Either that, or it was kind of at the point where it was kind of a given that I was going to be
sure.
coming, but
because
I didn't
research...
get the official, like, yes, you have been accepted. I don't
sure.
know when,
yeah.
it,
so
when it was.
It was sort
exactly
of in conjunction, sort
yeah.
of with your,
yes,
like
supervisor.
Just your full application to UVic. Yeah. I'm applying for a master's in mechanical engineering.
Yeah.
But then this is sort of something you tack on.
Yeah, this was something additional, where that one was more kind of, I don't want to say essay. I don't exactly remember what the application looked like, but it was answering a couple of written questions
cool.
about your research that you're planning to do at UVic, because it is a UVic-specific program. So talking about how your research applies to climate solutions, mm-hmm. coastal climate solutions. And so with my research likely being in wave energy conversion, it's the perfect blend of this mechanical engineering component and then also finding renewable energy sources on the coast that can be applied to these coastal communities.
For sure. Just kind of going back as well to when you were talking about speaking to your supervisor before mm-hmm. the application or during the application, I remember that too with my supervisor as well. And I remember that being different to other applications at different schools. It was good to speak to somebody, like speak to the
for
person
sure, yeah.
who you're going to be working with for 2 years, and also just kind of devise a plan and see if like you're right for the program or your research interests sort of align. And it seems like it did with you, which is great.
Yeah.
And he was able to point you in the direction of this new program, this new cohort. Mm-hmm. Great. So just kind of talking about sort of this first year of your studies and comparing it to your undergraduate degree, how has the work so far in your program differed from the work you've done in your undergraduate degree? Or maybe it hasn't differed.
Yeah, well, I'd say it's more similar to my undergrad program than it will be for the rest of the time that I'm here, because the first year is mainly dedicated to coursework. Mm-hmm. So it is pretty similar to an undergrad curriculum where you take a couple courses. It is less courses.
Sure, for sure.
Because there is still a component of it where you are kind of looking for what you're going to be doing your research in. Although you may have some idea, you're still narrowing it down to precisely what it's going to be, so that when you are done with the coursework requirements, you have a pretty good idea of what you're going to be getting yourself into. And I say requirements, but it has been really cool to kind of pick courses that you feel like will benefit you in your research. It's honestly a little tough to narrow it down to you could take as many courses as you want, but
sure,
the requirement is 5. Not super keen to do more than that.
Yeah, so, totally. Is that 5 for the first year or
5 in the first year? Yeah. I think because I took 2 the first semester, taking 2 this semester, mm-hmm, and I have 1 left. If I'm going to be taking 1 and it's kind of limited to whatever courses are offered in the summer, maybe I'll take that extra course next year.
For sure.
And then focus more on more research stuff this summer. It's pretty flexible. Mm-hmm. The other thing is there's 2 courses that are associated with the CCSL program.
Okay.
And those actually do count towards my course requirements.
Okay. So this is in addition to the 5?
Included in the 5. So in some ways that's great because I don't have to do any extra work, but at the same time, suddenly you go from being able to pick from 5 courses that are definitely like specifically dedicated to my research,
yep,
to 3. Of
sure.
course, there
okay.
are applications yeah. of those 2 CCSL courses to my research and figuring out how my research might tie into sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's not directly focused on the research. So we'll see. Maybe I will end up taking more than 5 courses in order to just kind of gain enough of base knowledge of what I feel like I need to do for my research.
For sure.
But we'll see.
Sweet. So just so I'm sort of understanding this right, so you have to take 5 courses for your mechanical engineering degree.
Yeah.
And then there's 2 courses for the CCSL
yep.
that you have to take for this cohort.
Yeah.
So that's included in the 5.
That can be included in the 5. So
yeah, okay.
So 3 mechanical engineering specific courses and then 2 of the CCSL courses.
For sure. Yeah, sweet. I mean, that's pretty great that it's so flexible and you're able mm-hmm. to take it across different semesters. It's kind of the same for me too. I have 5 or 6 courses that I can kind of, they're always offered too, so it's kind of
yeah. Oh, that's good.
The
yeah.
flexibility. It's interesting to think about that because I feel like, I don't know, I've never really spoken to many people who've done master's studies in engineering because mm-hmm. I feel like engineering is also one field where unless you're going into something quite specific like you are, you're able to find a job in some ways, like right out of school, whereas
yeah.
there are lots of degree programs in the arts and the humanities where it's, I would say it's a little bit more difficult. And also maybe generally, this might be a generalization, but I noticed that there are more people in the arts and humanities who go into master's programs than those in engineering and the mm-hmm. sciences, unless they're going for PhD programs or want to go into like teaching or research, like further research. So it's interesting to see that how similar mm-hmm. some of these programs are on the like the structure level as
yeah.
well. So for those CCSL courses, everybody in your cohort has to take them and you all take them at the same time?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we do. And yeah, they're offered in the fall and then the spring. The fall one is the Climate Solutions Foundations course, which
okay.
is kind of going through the IPCC report from the UN,
mm-hmm.
Which kind of documents the progress of climate change. And we go through that. We have guest speakers and we just get a foundational knowledge of climate solutions. This semester is the BC. Okay. I gotta
yeah, think
remember
about the
what
acronym.
It's called. It's like BC4 or something. It's
okay.
BC Coastal Climate Challenge,
okay.
I think is
cool.
what it is. And I mean, obviously we're the first cohort, so
mm-hmm.
there's only been one. We're going to be helping to design potential communities to, as they're renovating, destroying, and rebuilding the Ian Stewart complex, which is just across McKenzie from us here.
That's like the sports complex.
Yeah. It's right now it's the sports complex. They're going to be taking that down and kind of creating a residential area for people, deciding what kind of amenities we want to see there, what kind of sustainable features we can implement there. And I know we're going to be making two different designs, one that's more within the constraints that we have. And that's part of the challenge is learning what these constraints are, because there's no like specific guideline that they're giving to us, and we kind of have to piece it together from all these different jurisdictions and municipalities. But yeah, we have that constrained design, and then we have one where if we were given a little more flexibility, this is what we'd do, because sometimes there is a bit of flexibility within these constraints. So looking at, okay, well, if we could push this limit by a little bit, what would be the outcome there? So it's going to be cool to see how those two designs differ. And I believe there's four or five teams of four within us. Yeah, that makes sense. 20. Quick maths. And each of us will be making two of those designs. So for a total of like 20 or
8 to 10
designs. And yeah, then not too sure how much they might end up implementing from that.
For sure.
But it'll be cool to have some student input from graduate students across disciplines from UVic into a community that's going to be so close to home.
With these groups, like, were they randomly assigned or were they assigned by discipline?
Yeah, they were somewhat randomly assigned I mean, it sounds like there was a lot of time that went into figuring out how to get people from across disciplines in each group. Then also, because it is master students and PhD students in this program.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Cool.
Also having a blend of masters and PhD students in each of these. So of course it's not going to be perfect where you have one mechanical engineer, one environmental scientist, one person with a business degree in every single team. But for the most part, it has been pretty spread out across the board, and it's super great to work with all these fields.
Yeah, that's super interesting. It's a really great, sounds like a really great practical project for all of you to kind of like see what you all bring to the table in terms of strategy, planning, and actually implementing some of these ideas you're talking about in your classes. Yeah, I didn't know about the PhD students. That's cool too. Yep. So are they all first year PhD students as well, or sort of entering it in?
No, I think there's a couple who are already pretty well into their PhD.
Sure.
I don't remember exact number of years that everyone's been doing it. But yeah, that is another interesting thing. Like, so because it's not just incoming master students or incoming PhD students. Some of my fellow engineers who have already done all their coursework are now taking these extra courses
Cool. Nice.
So yeah, I've heard mixed reviews about that, like having to take more courses now. But for the most part, it hasn't seemed to be too much of an issue.
Totally. And I would assume like everybody kind of who would tack this on are really interested in applying sort of, or at least going into that kind of career.
Yeah. Understood the commitment.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's good that there's like a lot of interest and that they're able to at least like easily get in and kind of get involved with this program. And also speaking about just the range of people you have entering this program or being a part of it in some way, like with PhD students and with master's students too, like people come from everywhere after various points of time, right? Like various durations. There are people going straight from their undergrad into master's degree. Like I'm sure there's a few in your program, and there's people who have probably worked for a few years and then started the master's degree.
Yeah.
And then if you have PhD students, then there's probably, I don't know, people who have been maybe working for 10 years and then did a master's degree, did a PhD. Like it's cool that you're able to bring so many people from different disciplines and with different experience levels into the same space to implement these solutions. And practically as well, which is really cool. Just kind of talking about your cohort a little bit, how has the work of your peers influenced your own research and the work of others in your field? So how do you feel about your research? Or has your initial idea for what you'd like to go into changed as a result of working with people from different disciplines?
Yeah, that is interesting. It's there's a lot of similarities between me and another guy who's doing this CCSL
okay.
program. His name is also Luke. Mm-hmm. He has the same supervisor. We're both doing research in wave energy conversion.
Yeah.
And we're both in the CCSL program. So it's been good to kind of be able to lean on him and see the different avenues that mm-hmm. can take within very similar research. I forget exactly what his research in wave energy conversion pertains to. I will be looking at optimizing a very specific kind of wave energy converter, a point absorber mm-hmm. that has that kind of drives these cylinders, and seeing how the different lengths of these cylinders can be used to optimize how much energy they generate based okay. on how big the waves are. Mm. Because if you can imagine, if the cylinders are too short and you have these big waves, they're going to bottom out and mm-hmm. you're not going to be able to generate as much energy. Similarly, if you have these huge cylinders and these tiny waves, you get the most energy when they're super compressed. And if they're not getting compressed enough by these tiny waves, you're not generating that much energy either. So
it's about efficiency,
yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah, yeah, kind of optimizing all these different variables. And one cool thing that I might try and implement into that is figuring out how we can train machine learning algorithms mm-hmm. to get all these data points of wave conditions and cylinder lengths and combine them all to make predictions about what those optimal lengths are, when and where.
For sure. So just so I'm understanding this right, too, these cylinders, they're like sort of floating. You choose a point however many meters away from shore at a certain, I guess, like high tide, low tide, also depends.
Yeah.
Your research is trying to determine the optimal point for these cylinders to go, when and where, and also the size of these cylinders per point?
Yeah, well, it's kind of fixed where these, picture them as buoys.
Yeah, okay, sure.
That move up and down. And when they move up and down, they drive these cylinders. These buoys are always in one place. So yep. we're getting wave data for that singular place. We're okay. not thinking about moving them around too okay. much. But we are thinking about, okay, do we want a fixed cylinder length mm-hmm. that's going to work all year? Is that going to be what's best? Or are we going to be changing the cylinder lengths, how far they can move in order to optimize how much energy that they're producing?
So that would require like going out to the buoys, changing up the cylinder, like this mechanism at certain points of the year.
Yeah, I'm actually even still a little unclear about how that happens. Like perhaps can have it just so that the piston is fixed to only go a certain length where
okay.
you can still have this super long cylinder, but the piston only moves like a certain amount.
Okay.
And then be able to change that setting, or I don't think we'd have to actually swap out completely different cylinders.
Okay. So it's kind of like yeah. tension, I guess, like you're just changing the tension of the piston?
Probably more like the pressure.
The pressure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah, for sure. Because the wave hits this buoy cylinder
yeah.
and the piston hits, or the yeah. piston activates, depending on how strong yeah. the wave is.
It's a free moving piston, so the wave actually moves it.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I guess in the summer months when there's less storms, less mm-hmm. The waves are smaller, it would only be able to move a certain amount because you get that most energy out of those high pressures. But then when you get bigger waves in the winter with all these big storms, you could set it so that the piston can move a much longer length.
For sure.
And generate
all, more energy.
Yeah, all that energy.
Are there specific locations that your research, well, I'm sure there are, like where are they? Are they like,
yeah.
on the island? Or?
They're nearby. I do not know actually exactly where it is
okay.
right now. I'm still kind of just learning about all this myself.
Totally. And you probably have to like choose sites to kind of focus on more specifically
yeah.
as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, for
yeah.
sure. But these are local, like mm-hmm. at least in BC kind of thing.
Yeah.
Sweet. That's mm-hmm. awesome. Sounds really interesting. I think I understand it,
yeah.
I guess. And I can see how it's very important to like have a lot of planning to go into it with this machine learning stuff
yeah.
and this like just like trying to figure out what the optimal size, pressure, whatever, and like whether or not you do need to switch things out. Yeah. And then also like if you do need to switch things out, I'm sure there's a lot of considerations where it comes to like budget and like actually getting people out there to do it. Maybe safety issues too, like if they're really far out, I'm not sure. Yeah, super interesting stuff. What do you think is a common misconception about your field? And that could be in engineering, or it could be about sustainability, environmental science even, if you want to speak on that. Like, also, if you can't think of anything, that's okay too, but I just thought it's sort of an interesting question.
Yeah, it's funny. We talked about this in some of our first CCSL sessions because we were all coming from all these different fields and kind of wanted to get to know each other and what we were doing within our different fields. And I don't know, the first thing that always comes to mind for me is that all mechanical engineers are car people.
Fair enough.
You're the mechanical engineer. What's this sound happening under the hood of my car?
Yeah.
I probably couldn't tell you.
Yeah, sure.
We work with motors and we do all these things, but it's so wide ranging in what you can focus on. You can even more focus on smaller, more electronically oriented things where you're kind of doing a bit of a hybrid between electrical and mechanical engineering. That's kind of called mechatronics, doing a bit of robotic stuff. And then it even like aerospace engineering is kind of an offshoot of mechanical engineering. So I'd say the biggest misconception is that we got a greasy towel slung over our shoulders and we're working with motors all the time, and that's kind of the extent of it. But as you can see, it spans out into sustainability too.
For sure.
And having to be able to work and communicate with all these other people in other fields in order to bring the engineering to life.
Totally. Just like thinking like every idea, like let's say like there's like a new idea for some sort of sustainable power source or whatever.
Yeah.
Like someone can think of it, but you need a mechanical engineer to actually like plan it out and like say if it'll work or not. Like how, what are the systems, what are the mechanisms that we need in order for this to work? And like in your case too, like make something optimal, like make something very efficient and reduce costs, reduce labor, everything you need kind of thing. Yeah, that's super fair. I guess I've kind of maybe also made that assumption too, that mechanical engineers are mechanics who could fix my car.
Yeah.
Just thinking about like sustainability more broadly, do you think that an interdisciplinary approach is important in approaching these issues? Like, do you think that these sorts of cohorts like you have should be the norm across different universities?
Yeah, in terms of sustainability, 100%. Climate change is not an issue that we can solve with just a bunch of engineers or with just even a bunch of climate scientists, because there's things that climate change affects that go beyond the scope of their knowledge even. So it really takes having these groups of people that can come together and each bring their own unique expertise into finding solutions that will work across the board. There may be the ideal engineering solution to some problem, but it doesn't consider, for example, maybe let's say that we have an offshore wind turbine. Great, that's awesome. We're generating all this electricity for a coastal community. But did we consider where it's being built, the kind of biodiversity there that might be affected? What about the people? Are they going to be super accepting of having maybe these giant wind farms obstructing their view of the skyline? It's a very interdisciplinary issue that requires expertise across all these fields. And so, yeah, 100%, if we are to start having more of these programs across universities, not just at UVic, it's important that there is a balance of all these different experts who can each bring their unique take on the problem to solve it the best it can be.
Yeah, you made a great point there just about like the implications that a big project might have. You can propose a big wind farm somewhere and it can sound like a great idea on paper. It'll be beneficial in many ways that matter, but then it's right next to a small community or something like that. Like there's a lot of policy you have to consider. There's a lot of politics as well, and like land and geography, all these things, making the scope even wider. Do you think there's room for example, like arts or humanities, health science, kinesiology students, like integrating even more fields into sustainability studies? And how do you think that would look in an ideal world? I also know like you've been interested in these things in the past, like in the arts and things like that. So
yeah,
maybe you can speak from that as well, like your own experience in bringing these ideas all together.
Yeah. Well, I will say that one of the biggest drivers of change is getting people invested in making that change. It's going to take everyone in order to really see change. We can't make these global switches in our demand for energy without getting everyone on board. And one of the best ways to do that is to bring awareness to it through the arts, for example, bringing it into films and into visual art and into theater, where people are really taking these messages to heart. Unless people are truly believe that it is a cause worth fighting for, then we're not going to be able to make the change that we need to.
For sure. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I don't know if you know about this, but there's a super interesting program with music as well. So there's Ocean Networks Canada, which is kind of run out of UVic as well. They do sort of like a music artist in residence who they're supposed to do work kind of associated with oceans, sustainability, climate change. I know last year it was a PhD student by the name of Colin who did steel drum work based on whale song. So just really, really interesting stuff, and like brought Ocean Networks Canada to my attention, first of all.
Yeah.
But also just you're totally right. Like people kind of diss on the arts a lot sometimes, just like in terms of saying that the work that they do doesn't matter all the time. I think you're totally right in saying that it's like the best way to get people invested into things, get people to care, because artists know how to pull out the heartstrings. So that's kind of, and they use it to inspire change, as you said. What do you think will be next for you after this kind of chapter of your life?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't even really see myself for a long time, especially at the start of my undergrad. It was kind of like, it was pretty tough. And I was in engineering and I was thinking, I'm going to get this done and that'll be all for academia for me. But things just kind of moved in the direction where I ended up here and I'm loving it. And that's kind of the way that I've gone. I've kind of tried to seize opportunities that come to me and see where they take me. So I won't say, it kind of makes it sound like, oh yeah, whatever happens. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I feel like it's more that I will really try and take hold of an opportunity that comes my way and see where it takes me. And if it's something that I want to be doing, then I'll continue doing it. And if I don't want to do it anymore, then I won't do it anymore.
Yeah, for sure.
So for example, like I don't really have any plans to continue towards doing a PhD, but you never know. Really never know what's going to happen. With the CCSL program, we do some kind of interdisciplinary internship at some point.
Okay, cool.
That might combine your research with some aspect of sustainability. I mean, my two are kind of already intrinsically tied together, but who knows, maybe that'll mean working with some company that brings me into industry.
Totally.
So I'm just really excited to see where all these opportunities take me, and whether that's industry or whether that's continuing in academia, I'm just excited for what the future brings.
Awesome. Do you have anything else to add to this interview? Anything else you want people to know about the program or your work or yourself?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure where they are on. I think applications have already been submitted for this incoming cohort. Yep. So the second cohort, but maybe look into it if you're interested in that. There might be still accepting applications, because honestly, not only has it been a great program for learning more about sustainability, but I've made some great friends through the program too. Mm-hmm. And it's really allowed me to kind of broaden my horizons of the people I'm hanging out with. It's now no longer just I'm in these classes with all these engineers.
Totally.
It's given me an opportunity to still be in classes with other engineers, but also people from other fields. And it's been a really cool experience. And I'm 100% glad that I did it.
Yeah, it's pretty fantastic that all of you are kind of in this program together, because I think a lot, you can ask many grad students and kind of say, like, do you know anybody else like in different programs? Like, and they'll say, probably not. Like, it's harder to make friends, I think, than it is in undergrad, maybe in some ways, because you're not in residence. Like, you don't have bigger classes. It's harder to get involved with clubs and things, I feel like. So it's pretty fantastic. Like, you kind of like have a built-in, very like tight-knit group, it sounds like, across disciplines that can bring you to these different opportunities that might come up.
For sure.
Thanks so much, Luke. I really appreciate you being here, and best of luck with the rest of your studies.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks for having me, Sam.
Thanks again to Luke Seibold. This was a really great episode to start off the 10th season of Beyond the Jargon, and I'm super glad we were able to start off by discussing really important global issues that have very strong local implications here in Victoria and the West Coast overall. I personally am really inspired when I hear about the work that graduate students do to tackle these big issues, especially at a local level, with practical work encouraged and organized by cohorts like CCSL. Thanks for tuning in. This has been Beyond the Jargon on CFUV 101.9 FM, and I hope you'll tune into our next episode. My name is Sam Kaiser, and I hope you have a great rest of your day, your evening, or whatever time this ends up being broadcast at. Thank you so much.